Have you ever thought about that while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb? I did. I actually bought two homes in Albuquerque that I Airbnb'd, and it was just an amazing investment, honestly, because, you know, as you are accruing value in your property, you are also making money on the Airbnbs. It's amazing. So your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
21 Seeds infused tequila is a must-have. It's an award-winning tequila. It's infused with real juice, with real fruit, which means the flavors are built in. It's real. So you need like two or three ingredients to make your perfect cocktail. Hey, you know how I'm always trying to keep my house parties exciting? New cocktails? Do you?
Yeah.
Okay, well, here's something that's going to flip the script.
Okay.
All right, 21 Seeds infused tequila.
Yeah. Tell me more about this, right? Oliver Hudson.
Yeah, 21 Seeds is an award-winning tequila that's infused with juice from real fruits. You only need two to three ingredients to make the perfect cocktail.
Wait a minute. I think I know what brand you're talking about. You know why?
Yeah.
Because 21 Seeds is founded by two sisters and their friend. It's female founded.
That's right.
See?
Sounds
See
like
how I know? Something I can get behind.
I know. Well, there's a good story behind that for sure. Listen, if you love tequila, you have to try 21 Seeds infused tequila. Enjoy responsibly. 21 Seeds, Diageo, New York, New York.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hi, I'm Kate Hudson.
And my name is Oliver Hudson.
We wanted to do something that highlighted our relationship.
And what it's like to be siblings.
We are a sibling rivalry.
No, no.
Sibling rivalry.
Don't do that with your mouth.
Sibling rivalry.
That's good.
Oliver Hudson, my brother.
I've been watching Love Island.
I know. But I just want to explain Oliver. I don't think I've ever called you that on the show. And
I know.
Oliver is what I've always called, was how I would say Oliver when I was little.
Yeah.
So every once in a while, I'll just be like,
that's Oliver? True. Oliver. Sometimes Oliver? That happens. And I get like, I'm like, but I feel like insecure kind of. Because it's like too vulnerable or something.
Yeah.
Maybe it brings back
shame.
Well, yeah, because probably when you were calling me that, I was rejecting you.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Welcome, everyone. This is, I mean, we're so excited. This is, you know, we're our new season of Sibling Revelry.
Yes, we are back. Bigger, better, stronger, more
bigger,
episodes.
Better, stronger.
You know, we're injecting steroids into this podcast.
Well, and also it's exciting because we really wanted to like get it going and get some momentum and always have our podcast available throughout the week. And we've got some really new fun things that we're doing. Like we have our episodes with siblings, or whether they be siblings that are on television or siblings that we hear about in the news or siblings that people know, or celebrity siblings. But we're also doing our Revelant episodes, which are my favorite.
Yeah. Where it's kind of like you and I have certain people that we revere or that we want to get to know or
interested
talk to
in.
That interest us.
Yeah. Or who could be a great, have a great story that we want to kind of.
Yeah. And each week
explore.
We sort of trade off a little bit. You know what I mean? Like you do your revel in it, then I'll do my revel in it. And as similar and as connected as we are, we both have some very different guests. You could probably guess who mine are and guess who Kate's are without even telling you.
Yeah, we could just tell people what they do and why, and people would be like, oh, that's definitely an Oliver revel in it.
Yeah, no doubt.
But we are so excited to be back, and we are also looking forward to, your correspondence with us. We're always listening. So check in with us and, you know, we'd love to hear any ideas too. If you have any good ideas, yeah, we'd love to hear it.
And then for me personally, I just need to know how I'm doing because I seek validation. So if you're going to write in, you know, you can give us ideas, you know, all that, but definitely I need an analysis of how I'm doing.
Exactly.
You know, let's just move on to Love Island.
Oh, tell me. I know.
It's nothing. I'm like upset with myself, you know, because what happens is—
For loving it so much?
Yeah, because I have my morning and then I do my like work. I do my coffee. Da, da, da. Then I'll go out and do something. And then I come home and I have like maybe 40 minutes between things. So I make some food and I sit down at my TV and I just put on something mindless. Yeah. That I won't give a shit about. And I put on Love Island. And now I'm like 8 episodes deep. Like, and it's such mindless horse crap, you know?
But you love it.
I love it. I love it. And it's ridiculous.
I know. It's okay. Whatever. I think it's okay to love these shows. I think, look, sometimes as long as you have perspective on them, I just think it's weird when people love them so much they want to be on them. Like, then you're like, wow, that's intense. Oh, that's like a, that's like what, like, could you imagine actually making the decision to go on a show like Love Island?
Well, imagine me at like 47, like coming down the stairs, Oliver Hudson with my shirt off. People would like literally start vomiting. I mean, people would be like, oh, Jesus. Whoa.
Oh, man. No, but I'm like all for those kinds of shows.
And then you I love them. I've seen every one.
Look, you know, there's a lot of people who think like, oh, The Bachelor and like what it stands for and all this stuff. And I don't know. I think it just, everybody needs to just relax.
Oh, God. The Ultimatum, I love. Love is Blind, I've seen. Love Island, Fuckboy Island, The Bachelor.
I like Love is Blind. Love is Blind is a really interesting social experiment to me.
It's great.
Yeah. Because you're sort of like, wow.
Yeah.
It, you know.
Yeah.
What would it be like? I mean, and then my favorite is when they finally see each other.
Yeah, and they're like, oh God.
Because you're like, uh-oh. The moment where someone's so excited and you can just see in their face like, oh no.
I know.
How do I get past that I'm not, you know? And I also think like the pheromone thing is interesting because you're taking the science part out of it. You can't smell the person.
Yeah.
And like the pheromone is directly connected to like, I guess, well, I'm gonna butcher this right now,
but
there's something about the pheromone that's directly connected to your
genital area,
your mating compatibility.
Right. Your penis and
now,
your vagina.
I could have totally made that up.
Yeah, I don't
but
know.
But I think that's what it is.
Sounds good though. But it just proves love is not blind. I mean, yeah, you get to know each other, personality, but like physical and
I think
chemical
it proves that love
real.
is smelly.
Yeah, love stinks.
Love is a smelly business.
Yeah.
And
no, I know.
Ollie, I'm really excited to talk about
our new guests.
Our next guest.
I think they're in the waiting
room. Guests.
I love that we have a waiting room and that's what we call it.
I know. I know. Well, most people who do Zooms have waiting rooms.
We should call it, it's more of a green room. You know what I mean? Because we do provide snacks and drinks at their prospective homes.
That's actually really funny. We should do that. We should actually
Send them like a little like
care like pack. We're usually 5 to 15 minutes late. So here's our green room.
But this is really fun. This is the first time we've done something like this where our sibling episodes are not actual siblings.
No.
But they're show siblings.
Very famous show siblings.
From an iconic television show.
That's right.
Called The Brady Bunch.
So we have Barry Williams, Chris Knight, Mike Lockenland waiting to talk to them about this experience. I'm excited, Ollie, because my big question that I want to make sure that I ask is like, how does that affect your own relationships with your siblings? Like, you know what I mean? If you're young and you're on a show.
Such a great question, by the way.
Yeah, if you're on a show, thanks.
Yeah.
But if you're on a show, I think Hannah might have come up with that question, our producer, but but it was my favorite one.
Yeah.
But I feel like it kind of got me thinking, like, imagine if I was, you know, I don't know, 11, 12 years old, and that for those 5 years was on this mm-hmm. big iconic show. And then my siblings were like, I don't know. I would feel like it would kind of mess me up, mess everything up.
No, I think it's a great question. And you know, these guys have been doing this interview process for 100 years, and I bet you they've never been asked that question. So it's definitely one to remember. See.
But Barry and Chris have a podcast.
Yep.
They, their podcast is, I mean, where they basically go through episode to episode of the Brady Bunch and
break it down,
talk about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. And, that's fun.
But I'm excited. I'm excited to talk to these guys.
Let's do it. Hey, Hannah, bring these bastards in.
Open the door. Open the door. Don't say that. That's a terrible thing to say.
Oh, I thought that they might, you know, enjoy
No, we gotta just... Ready? Open the Oliver. Hannah, can you open the door to the Brady
Bunch?
Open
sesame.
Oh. I don't know why it's so dumb.
Presented by 21 Seeds.
Ollie.
Yeah, so you know, because you have a ton of friends and you throw a lot of parties.
Yeah.
You don't really. I mean, you've got your core group of friends.
I do throw a lot of parties.
You do throw a lot of parties.
I love a party.
You need a signature cocktail that's ready to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's also actually nice to have a signature cocktail that's ready to go when you don't have a bartender.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's just nice to have something in your fridge when you get home from work and you just want a drink.
This is true.
But you know why I like this brand of tequila?
Let me guess. Can I guess?
Yes.
Female-founded.
Yes. I love a female-founded spirit because there aren't that many of us.
I know. And 21 Seeds makes the most delicious and easiest margaritas ever. They're smooth. They're fresh. They taste amazing. And they're not too sweet.
No.
I do not like sweet.
They're not overly sweet.
Yeah. And they're infused with real juice.
Yes. I love women. I love supporting women. So.
Two sisters. One friend.
Listen, if you love tequila, add 21 Seeds infused tequila to your drink bar at home.
Enjoy responsibly. 21 Seeds, Diageo, New York, New York.
It's a fun time of year because everybody's starting to gear up. You've got spring break happening soon. You've got summer happening soon. Everybody's thinking about their vacations. My number one source for where I might even go in the world, Airbnb. I've got spring break. I'm shooting. I only have 4 days. Where am I going to go? I go on Airbnb, and that usually is like, oh, there's a good house. I love that. Let's stay there. If you are someone who travels a lot or even has an empty room in your house, consider hosting on Airbnb. It's a lot easier than you might think, and it's also a great way to make some extra income. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Welcome, boys. We're here to talk about birds.
Today's episode.
Now it all started. The birds and the bees.
And the birds and the bees.
Christopher and Mike. Christopher, do you like Christopher or Chris?
Chris.
Okay.
Chris. Yeah, so before we get into anything, hold on. We were talking about, you know, before they were in the lobby, we were all talking before on the air, and Chris is a major bird man. We got into the whole bird talk, and it was quite fascinating. The man knows more about birds than probably bees.
I didn't bring up the birds. It was Mike brought up the birds because he has a parrot, apparently, that had to vacate the room. And then you shared that, in fact, you grew up with a macaw for a short time.
Right.
Macaws are serious business.
They really are. Maxine. Her name was Maxine.
Oh, and yeah.
She would Yeah. And she would speak. I would talk to her and she'd talk back all the time. She was so great.
But
yeah.
She didn't like infants.
No, she didn't.
Because like Wyatt, when
Wyatt
he came
was
home.
Born, and then Maxine went crazy, and all of a sudden she starts saying "fuck you, Wyatt," and no one even taught her that. It just sort of came naturally.
Oliver,
I'm the baby.
That sort of fits in with the theme of our show today. Here.
Yeah, right? Can we all just get along?
Right.
Do you guys do interviews often where the three of you are chatting together still, and do you go and do events and things like that?
We're individuals and not really a family, so though we will one of us get called and by somebody who expects us to pull it all together like we were a real family.
Yeah.
So no, not together, individually perhaps. So as soon as you add another and another, it gets progressively more difficult to rally everybody at the same time. And Barry and I are doing our podcast, so we have at times, you know, invited Mike on, and we've had that opportunity in, you know, on our show to reminisce. But other than that, it's rare. Mostly the times that we get together, you're watching it because it's somebody else pulling us together.
There's a critical mass that we can reach, and it, you know, that happens at six. If you get all six, oh boy. But three boys is a good start.
Right, right. Well, this is really fun for us because sibling revelry, obviously we have siblings on, but I think you're the first where we're doing show siblings.
Yes.
You know, we've done this before.
It's also really interesting because, you know, well, let's start with this. How old were you when you started the show, all of you? And obviously, you know, older brother, middle brother, baby brother, and the show. But what was the age range?
14 to 20 for me.
14 to 20.
And I started, are you 14 at the pilot, Barry, or 14 first year?
Both.
So pilots. Okay. So 10 to 15, 15 and a half. Yeah.
I was 9 to 14.
Wow.
No, 8 actually. In 69, I was 8.
You were 8, yeah.
Yeah.
Quickly, because I'm sure it can be a long, long story, especially for all three. What was the casting process like? You know, were you all actors initially? Was some of you not? Did you go in and read multiple times? Did you screen test? Did you have any inkling that it was going to be an iconic show in any way?
Barry, what do you remember? Because I'm...
Well, we might have different stories about this because I think the process was different for each of us. But initially, there was a cattle call. It's referred to with when everybody has an agent, you know, comes in. I had been acting, I'd been active, I'd done a lot of episodic television like Run for Your Life, Dragnet, FBI, Invaders, Mod Squad, Gomer Pyle, That Girl, Mission Impossible, Marcus Welby, MD, It Takes a Thief, you know, a lot of stuff. And there were just mountains of people, and Sherwood was our producer was trying to weed that out. There are some 1,100 kids that came in over the course of time, and then we would come back. Those were just straight interviews. Then there was a follow-up interview, and then there was a screen test where they actually had the camera and the director in there. I had a little bit of a leg because, well, you had to fit the suit, right, to use a Greg Brady term, because the ages and looking alike and that kind of thing. But the director, our director who directed the first 7 episodes, had directed me in Gomer Pyle and That Girl, both of which were on Paramount. So he knew me, he was familiar with me, and the network knew me as well as the studio. So that, I think, was helpful. Then there was a screen test, and then a script arrived.
Who was cast first?
Susan Olsen.
Okay.
Susan Olsen was cast ahead of the adults.
Wow.
Yes. Sherwood Schwartz fell in love with her, and she walked in and he was eating out of her hand. It was just instant. And she had a couple of choices. She was up for another series too, which I, maybe one of you know which one it was. Gunsmoke, possibly. I think it was Gunsmoke. They were going to act. Character, and she said that she wanted to do the Brady Bunch because then she'd have all these brothers and sisters.
Smart choice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mike, do you recall? Because I get asked this and I have very little recollection of the casting process.
Bobby was the last cast member to be chosen.
But do you remember the process? I mean, what?
It was different for me. It was very different for me. My story is kind of the opposite of Barry's. Up until I got cast for the Brady Bunch, I had done two parts. I had been on two television commercials, one for Band-Aids, in which I was just wrestling in a playground and you couldn't pick me out. And the other was a paper towel commercial in which you only saw my hands. That was my entire resume.
Well, yours is going into the Brady Bunch.
And they had everybody else. And of course, they had the adults out of the core nine people, including Alice. And they had trouble finding a Bobby. And so they looked in other markets, mainly New York. And they came back to L.A. And according to Sherwood, I got cast, well, not only because I could look, I looked acceptably like Robert Reed and you two guys, we could be brothers. But also, it's in their book that they sat me down. And I mean, we're just talking about little children here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They sat me down and carried out an interview with me with a coffee table full of toys. And I didn't go for the toys. I paid attention to what was happening with the grownups. And so that was sort of one of their tests. I did not get a screen test, but I remember it's very, the boys and the girls were step brothers and sisters, right? And it was very much kind of that situation where we each had our own families, of course, and we all have siblings and real siblings. And I was walked into a room. I picture it being nighttime, like it was evening, and all the other cast members were there. And I was holding my mother's hand, and they walked me into this room, and they said, "Mike, here's your new family." And I was, and it was sort of a "huh" moment.
Giving you away.
Yeah, and you know, we'll see where that goes. We, you know, I have no idea what you mean by that, but you know, off we went. And there was a lot. There was a pretty big gap in the calendar between the pilot and the shooting of episode one of the first season back in those days. Back in those days, you made the pilot and then you shopped it around, a finished product to see who would buy it.
Yeah, we shot the pilot in September and October of 68. I mean, we weren't back together until June 69. Right.
Yeah, so there,
I don't think we got the pickup in April or May.
Yeah, almost 6 months. Yeah, So when you're 8 years old, you know, 6 months is that's a big chunk of time.
When you all met for the first time, or when you started the process, was it like, did you feel an instant connection, or did it take a while? Did it take like a couple episodes or a year, you know? Or was it kind of like you guys all were excited and ended up immediately connecting?
It's like any other job that's a first week, you know? I mean, if it's only a week long, you never really get beyond that. I think it was a 10-day shoot, and I don't think we really had anything to do, any interaction with the girls except for the wedding scene itself. So we really hardly got to know who they were, if I recall correctly. And my casting experience, what I remember is similar to Mike's. I don't remember a screen test, and they didn't have portable cameras in the time. So I don't, and I believe it was just in Sherwood's office. And Mike, I have the same experience with, it's a personality test. It wasn't an audition of any type.
Right.
So sure wasn't aware that I couldn't read a line.
We're going to put a lot of weight on, these kids. And hopefully have a hit show on our hands, and we want to see if they can handle it.
I only played with the toys.
You played with the toys. See, they were looking.
One of the things, Michael, you might want to amplify a little bit is it was a hair issue with Michael not conforming to both Christopher and I.
I had real blonde, strawberry blonde hair and freckles, which at the time in the movie business was like solid gold. You know, mm-hmm. I ended up over the years getting dozens and dozens of spots on commercials, but they had chosen they had chosen, darn it, what was the show? Not Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. Anyway, they had,
it was down,
Here Come the Brides. Yeah, they had chosen the kid who's my age, who ended up being in Here Come the Brides. And they said to my agent and my parents, you know, we like Mike better. We'd like to cast Mike, but he's got to have black hair. And at the time, it seemed like a big deal. I mean, you wouldn't think twice about it now. You'd have green skin if mm-hmm. it was, you know, if that was what the part called for. But at the time, it seemed like a big deal. So we said, okay, I'm going to have black hair. And Barry, you might not know, I was cast as Eddie in Courtship of Eddie's Father.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And Tony, which was our common agent, we all had the same agent. Tony said,
hit.
Yeah, Tony said, imagine.
The four of you, Susan, Barry, and Maureen.
Didn't we all end up with the same agent?
And then we all ended up with the same, but even I had different agents.
Tony Kelman said no to my family. You know, you're up for these two roles. Coach Bavetti's father has come in first, offering you the job. I don't want you to take it. I want you to pass it up and hope we get this other one. And the other one turned out to be the Brady Bunch.
Wow.
Holy hell.
Smart. Did you ever ask her why she made that call? Because Coach Bavetti's father on paper.
My family lore says that Tony told my mom, I don't like, quote, the people.
Oh.
Were your parents very involved in this process and then moving forward into the series just because they had to be on set, obviously?
Yeah, because I wonder, because at the time, I mean, we were talking, you said 68, 69.
Mm-hmm.
Like, were there even, like, did they have the same regulations? Like, did you have to have school on set? Were there certain hours you could work? Was it, did they...
Already Jackie Coogan law was in place. You had the child welfare laws that haven't changed at all since then. You know, 8 hours a day, 1 hour lunch.
So you were all in school together too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they started conveniently when we started the production itself. We started the Monday after school got out. And we were all in public school. So we were all on the same school calendar. So that Monday that LA Public Schools was out for summer vacation was the first day of production. Oh. And they did that every year.
Oh, great.
So that at least they could get as many days as possible with us not having to have that 3 hours of school.
Got it.
Presented by 21 Seeds.
Ollie.
Yeah, so you know... Because you have a ton of friends and you throw a lot of parties.
Yeah.
You don't really. I mean, you've got your core group of friends.
I do throw a lot of
you
parties.
You do throw a lot of parties.
I love a party.
You need a signature cocktail that's ready to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's also actually nice to have a signature cocktail that's ready to go when you don't have a bartender.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's just nice to have something in your fridge when you get home from work and you just want to drink.
This is true.
But you know why I like this brand of tequila?
Let me guess. Can I guess?
Yes.
Female-founded.
Yes. I love a female-founded spirit because there aren't that many of us.
I know. And 21 Seeds makes the most delicious and easiest margaritas ever. They're smooth. They're fresh. They taste amazing. And they're not too sweet.
No.
I do not like sweet.
They're not overly sweet.
Yeah. And they're infused with real juice.
Yes. I love women. I love supporting women. So.
Two sisters. One friend.
Listen, if you love tequila, add 21 Seeds infused tequila to your drink bar at home.
Enjoy responsibly. 21 Seeds, Diageo, New York, New York.
It's a fun time of year because everybody's starting to gear up. You've got spring break happening soon. You've got summer happening soon. Everybody's thinking about their vacations. My number one source for where I might even go in the world, Airbnb. I've got spring break. I'm shooting. I only have 4 days. Where am I going to go? I go on Airbnb and that usually is like, oh, there's a good house. I love that. Let's stay there. If you are someone who travels a lot or even has an empty room in your house, consider hosting on Airbnb. It's a lot easier than you might think. And it's also a great way to make some extra income. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
So as we're moving through the series, or we're in the first season, you know, at what point did you guys start to connect? Understandably, 10 days, you know, shooting the pilot, 6 months between that.
It was, as you know, it's something about having met some, I don't know what happens, but you've met somebody, don't get to know them very well, but they're a known entity, and then you reconnect, and it's almost as though you connect at a different level than you left it the last time, or it seems like it immediately connects more deeply. I think also you recognize that there's a trepidation on any project because you're really not going to see these people probably ever again on most projects. Now, when you're, you know, cast in a series, you recognize you're going to be working together for a while, and there's a little bit more investment. I don't know if it's conscious. I mean, as I'm 11 years old here, as the series is, you know, in production, I don't think I was thinking like that, but it feels like that in retrospect, that the friendship that I felt was almost immediate. I know it had to take some days to get going, but by the end of the first week, it's, you know, like we're old friends.
You say friendship, right? And of course, you're brothers, right? And there's obviously the age gap. So Barry, did you, older, 15, 16, getting your car, girls, this and that. I mean, how did that affect your relationship with the younger boys? Did you feel like an older brother in any way? Or was it just, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think we all brought our own skill set in from our nuclear families. As Michael pointed out, we all had brothers, sisters. I had two older brothers, being the youngest of myself. And so I was using the techniques from my older brothers that they used on me, which was not very kind to either Chris or Michael. And so I would tease them. I would play jokes on them. I would, you know, sometimes put them into compromising positions because that's what I learned and that's what I knew. And I didn't realize I was actually terrifying.
You know, he did. So the story, now Barry's heard this ad nauseum, and I repeat it every time because it's sort of foundational and you've asked the question. So when we were doing the pilot, and it was during the production of the wedding scene when we were on location and we had a shared wagon, a Winnebago or something that we all changed in. And even we'd carry on that sharing of dressing rooms beyond just this pilot and went on location. We shared the same dressing room for the first year when we were on the lot. But okay, so this first experience on location in a shared environment, Barry, you know, Barry was, I mean, and he wasn't warm to us, or I didn't feel that way. I mean, he was very mature for his age. Mm. Like, I assumed he drove to the location, but he had his hand in his pocket and he smoked. And he smoked. So he's an older kid already. And he had this thing in his pocket and he kept clicking it. Click, 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 click. And I'm just a little kid that's just, you know, trying just to stand on my mark and noticing. And he's noticing, I'm noticing the click. And he tells me to guess what it is. Now I'm thinking that I'm told that I got to guess what it is. Okay, we're, you know, the age we are, and they don't trust us to eat our lunch in our wardrobe. So our wardrobe is off at lunch.
Let's play. Kate, Oliver,
do it.
Can you guess? Can you guess what would be clicking in my pocket?
Lighter.
I want to do it.
Okay, go
lighter.
Ahead.
Lighter.
Yes. Go ahead.
All right. I had no clue. So, but I was industrious. I saw his pants at lunch sitting right there. I'm either looking at it or putting it back in his pants pocket. The door opens and it's him. And I'm caught, you know, like I don't remember what Barry at that moment thought, said, or what the look was on his face. 'Cause it didn't matter. Everything inside of me looked backward at me and just melted. And I never wanted to see him again. After that, that is a humiliating moment. And I remember when we got picked up. So, and I believe, tell me if I'm wrong, I think the wedding stuff was sort of at the last stuff we did in the production. Yeah. So that was near the end, right? Might have been the last day of production. It was like, oh, I hope I never have to see him again. Because I humiliated myself, I guess. And I don't think Barry did anything to compound it, right? I think he laughed or something. But, you know, But when we got the call and the show had been picked up from pilot to series, I remember wishing I knew how to do a backflip. This is because I was trying to learn how to do a backflip and then you didn't get together. And I go, this would be a time I would do a backflip. If I knew how to do a backflip. And then as I'm all excited about that, I realized, oh, I got to see him again. And that was my feeling going back into this. But when we started, the excitement of starting and now, you know, have this place to report to. I never had that feeling from him again. I mean, I don't know what it was on the pilot that day or those days that Barry gave off that feeling, but he it wasn't there when we started in the summertime.
My favorite part, though, is Barry was smoking. It's like I picture, like, you know, all right, cut, turn the cameras around. Barry's like, I'm gonna go have a smoke. He's like 15.
Totally. Just
the image of that is hysterical.
Oh my god, it is really fascinating to me. You know, when you're young and you're on like yet to be young and on a hit show, but it's. Like there were so many of you. So I wonder, like, when you start, well, I guess my question is, when did you realize that you were on a hit show or that it was like a hit?
When we started traveling and doing promotion, ABC was our network and they would send us out to do promotional junkets. We had a Christmas album early on and we would go out and do personal appearances. And when we started doing personal appearances, I think it became pretty apparent because we were inside the cocoon of the studio and our soundstage for the first year or so. And then after that, when we were meeting people who were watching our show and were fans of our show, we began to understand the impact of it. And that's where I think we really started to bond as well, because we all had our roles in being responsible for doing things. And I did assume a big brother kind of role. And I was protective, particularly of Susan, because of what we were subjected to. We're moving, logistics are, you know, enormous. We're flying in planes, we're driving in cars, we're arriving in buses and stuff. So we worked together quite a bit as a unit and learned how to rely and depend on one another. Probably what saved us.
Mm-hmm. I think that that's interesting in the way that you've asked the question. When did you know you were on a hit series? I don't think we ever thought we were on a hit series. I never felt we were on a hit series. We were never picked up. We were once picked up for an entire season. We always had to earn our back end. We were right on that kind of top 30 cusp back in the day. You know, the top 28 shows got picked up, and anything beyond that, you know, was, you know, maybe. And we were like always wondering if we're going to get picked up again or if this is going to be the end. But it doesn't matter to be on a hit show or not. The difference between not being known by anybody and then being on a series, it doesn't have to be a hit or not. All of a sudden you're in front of millions of people, and maybe as a child you just don't recognize what that is going to mean in your life. You're not prepared for that reflection of you. I mean, all of a sudden people know who you are before you're there. And that's not something that happened prior to that.
How did each of you deal with that sort of fame, you know, going from the youngest to the oldest? Barry, you've had some experience. You were on TV, I guess, you know, but was it intoxicating? Was it scary? You guys are just kids really at the time, you know?
I loved it. I loved every minute of it. I thought it was just the coolest thing in the world to be recognized and you know, meeting people and having fun. I felt a bit self-important. I had access to a lot of cool things too. Like, you know, my first car was a Porsche and I had the greatest stereo system happening, if, you know, for the day, and my JBL speakers and my Dewalt turntable and a record collection that went on for, you know, like three walls worth. And I, it was, you know, so I just,
Ooh, I hope you still have that record collection.
Well, you, Barry, you knew going on in, cause you really were purposeful about your career, even at 14. This is what you wanted to do. You had an awareness that if you were on a series or a hit series, even more so, that people would recognize you and empower you in some way. I mean, in other words, you were anticipating it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know many actors that like you get into the business to go unnoticed.
Well, that's my point. So, you know, we're kids, not intending to be in show business, and all of a sudden there's this flood of attention that you're not at all prepared for.
So was this more of your parents who were sort of wanted you to be in like acting or in the industry or commercial work?
It's simply an old world way to pay the bills.
Yeah.
Very different. You know, you're hitting on a really interesting subject, which is, I guess loosely called stage mothers, stage parents, but particularly stage mothers, because they're usually charged with the responsibility of being a guardian for their kids when they're on the set, as you well know. Well, stage mothers really is a term that is applied to basically mothers of children who want to live their lives through them. And that becomes really challenging. And that's not something we had to deal with very much. Certainly my mother was not that. And by the time I was 16, my mother gave Chris's mother authority to be my sort of quote guardian, but she really wasn't taking care of him all that much. I kind of had free reign after that.
There was no guarding, Barry.
I'm wandering off to the Gunsmoke set and climbing up in the facades of those of the town, the Western town, and smoking my cigarettes.
And then Mike, what about you? Like
Barry was very much too cool. He was miles out of my league. So I had to use Chris as sort of like an interim, you know, to get anywhere near as cool as Barry. I had to kind of ride Chris's coattails. I learned to one thing we did to entertain ourselves off camera was rip on Maureen McCormick. So I learned, or at least they did. I was mostly a spectator, but they would tease Maureen relentlessly, and I found that hilarious. But
that's why we did it.
Yeah. My family was singer entertainers from when I was a young child, and but what we would do is we'd go as a family to who knows what, you know, Rotary clubs or something, and sit and sing, and you know, my mom with the auto harp, and me and my sister on stools, and my little brother like literally babe in arms. And we would sing, we'd do a little show. So I had entertainment, you know, I had experience being in front of people from when I was just a toddler. Mm. But my parents, my story about getting into the TV business is a dad's family photo on the desk thing. Some woman, you know, everyone in LA works in the movie business, right? They might have a real job to make money, but everybody's in the business. So anyway, my dad,
you're perpetuating a myth.
Yeah, right. No, we yeah, but see, I can say in retrospect,
that's what you thought,
that my, you know, Barry said he loved every minute of it. I, uh, I, I certainly enjoyed it and loved the fame and the recognition. But given the opportunity, I can say now that my flight to Utah when I was 17 was just that. It was an escape to get that far away from LA and from agents and from casting directors and freeways.
Yeah, it's not for everybody.
I mean,
sometimes it takes, like, I think there's a lot of younger actors that have been and had experiences that just walk away from it and go, that's not going to be my life.
And being the youngest one, you know, I was still a kid when when we were done. It wasn't something, my childhood wasn't something I looked back on. I lived my childhood with money and cars in my 20s, things you wouldn't normally have when you were 10 years old. And that can be dangerous. I tell people that if every man, woman, and child had a high-def camera in their pocket when I was 17, my life would have been ruined.
You know, were wild?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Funny. These guys, listen, here's one. These guys have, over the years, gotten into calling me the normal one. I'm, you know, out of the six of us, I'm the normal one.
Called you the normal one.
Yeah, you knew better.
Well, one second, Kate, because I want to mention something that we've known each other for 56 years. Barry, did you know that he was family was like the Cowsills? We're learning something new here. I never knew that. I never knew that about Mike.
Dive into it real quick. When you say wild, I was wild. I mean, I did crazy shit. But what are we talking about? I mean, we're talking about drugs, fast cars, girls, crazy.
Stuff you wouldn't.
I got reports.
Want to tell your mama or your grandma about? Drugs and alcohol, and just general over, you know, all around breaking of the law.
Michael was a deadhead.
Oh yeah,
no, was he is.
Oh, now we're opening this.
Yeah. So a lot
I'm
of psychedelics.
Very familiar with deadheads.
A lot of psychedelics.
I married one once. Yeah.
I am actually. I've been playing the rock star lately. I'm in a Grateful Dead cover band.
Oh wow! Amazing.
In fact, Barry. You guys should see how long my hair is.
Oh, there you go.
That makes me so happy. Wait, where do you live?
I live in Salt Lake City, in Utah.
Wow.
It's been snowing, so Ollie, you should come go skiing. You too.
Yeah, I'm going to be in Snowbird on MLK Day. I'll be in Snowbird skiing.
Okay. I'll see you then. That's where I go.
Good.
You see my snowbird hat right here.
Yeah, no, I skied it for the first time last year, and we got interlodged. The snow was so good. I've skied all my life. It was some of the greatest skiing that I've ever done.
Interlodge is you're not allowed to leave the building. There's so much snow and there's so much avalanche danger.
Yeah, crazy.
I called Oliver on FaceTime, and I was like, "Where are you?" Because it was so. It was so different. Like, we grew up in Colorado, which, you know, so I knew he wasn't there. It couldn't have been a more different kind of terrain, but it looked amazing.
It's incredible.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I love it. Yeah. It's terrain-wise, it's beautiful here. And if I need to go to LA, hey, Barry, do you want to tell everybody why I was growing my hair long? I'm not sure.
I know.
No, you can't mutter that yet.
No,
why?
Okay.
You're growing mushrooms in your hair.
No, it's I think we might have one good Brady show left in us, maybe.
Ooh.
Yeah. Strike's over. Hello, CBS.
I know.
We just might have one more left in us. Well, there's been like 16 reunion shows. It's not like it's not like saying 17 is going to be like, you know, right. big news.
Right.
Presented by 21 Seeds.
Ollie.
Yeah. So, you know, Because you have a ton of friends and you throw a lot of parties.
Yeah.
Well, you don't really. I mean, you've got your core group of friends.
I do throw a lot of
you
parties.
You do throw a lot of parties.
I love a party.
You need a signature cocktail that's ready to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's also actually nice to have a signature cocktail that's ready to go when you don't have a bartender.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's just nice to have something in your fridge when you get home from work and you just want a drink.
This is true.
But you know why I like this brand mm-hmm. of tequila?
Let me guess. Can I guess?
Yes.
Female-founded.
Yes. I love a female-founded spirit because there aren't that many of us.
I know. And 21 Seeds makes the most delicious and easiest margaritas ever. They're smooth. They're fresh. They taste amazing. And they're not too sweet.
No.
I do not like sweet.
They're not overly sweet.
Yeah. And they're infused with real juice.
Yes. I love women. I love supporting women. So.
Two sisters, one friend.
Listen, if you love tequila, add 21 Seeds infused tequila to your drink bar at home.
Enjoy responsibly. 21 Seeds, Diageo, New York, New York.
It's a fun time of year because everybody's starting to gear up. You've got spring break happening soon. You've got summer happening soon. Everybody's thinking about their vacations. My number one source for where I might even go in the world, Airbnb. I've got spring break. I'm shooting. I only have 4 days. Where am I going to go? I go on Airbnb and that usually is like, oh, there's a good house. I love that. Let's stay there. If you are someone who travels a lot or even has an empty room in your house, consider hosting on Airbnb. It's a lot easier than you might think, and it's also a great way to make some extra income. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
When you guys started to get on the routine of doing all your promotion together and being together all the time, how did it affect your other relationships with your siblings?
Well, that's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
I don't think well. I didn't really understand this because I was so busy trying to hang. They used to call me tag along, my brothers, and because I wanted to do everything they did and just be there, be in the room. You know, whatever they were doing was cooler than what was going on in my life. Even as the show, progressed, then that not so much anymore because, well, frankly, what I was doing was way cooler. But there's this inordinate amount of attention that comes our way. There is so much, there's publicity in their teen magazines at this time, you know, going on television, people know you. The siblings can get lost easily in that mix. And I didn't realize that. I felt them distancing themselves from me, but they were older, you know, they're like 17 and 20, I mean, 18 and 20. So they were distancing, but, as adults, I came to understand that that had a very, very serious impact on their development and on their relationship with our parents and their, I would say, perhaps dislike for me.
Just envy?
Envy.
Wow. And has that been reconciled? I mean, or had it been reconciled over the years?
No.
Wow, that's so interesting.
Sibling rivalry.
I mean, right. It isn't. I mean, I think that we've interviewed a lot of celebrities with siblings that have been very supportive. It's also a very different generation. A lot of the younger, you know, siblings are, you know, talk things out differently, I guess. But there's also a lot of times where, you know, we ask certain people to come on and they just will not do it because their relationship with their sibling is too trying, you know? And so that's really understandable.
Well, no, I totally. But when you have love between a family, yes, there's jealousy, there's envy. You know, I subject myself to it, and I say myself because I'm the one who creates it. Granted, I have a great career, but you've got Kate, you've got Mom, you've got Kurt, now you've got Wyatt. I mean, they're all movie stars for the most part. And I'm not crying myself a river, but there is envy. There is like, oh, I wish I could do that, or I want to be that, or whatever it is. But it's, at the end of the day, it's all love because we're siblings. You know what I mean? We're a family. So I just wonder, especially with multiple siblings, how that doesn't get sort of, I guess, addressed or figured out because it seems pretty surface or petty.
Well, it might be petty. I mean, in my case, I don't have Barry's experience. We all have our individual experiences. But when you take into account what's really going down with a family, I'm sure Mike and Barry get asked the same question, you know, by their friends. They have a cute daughter or a cute son. He should do commercials. He should do modeling. He's, you know, and what do I think? I think never, you know, when they're 18, they can decide to be in the industry. There's no success they can have now that'll be consequential to the success that they'll have as an adult. Matter of fact, it might even create, you know, barriers to becoming a success as an adult. Because reality is that there's multiple kids in a family. I mean, I'm a year and a half younger than my older brother. I've got a sister 3 years younger and a brother 7 years younger. And my mom ain't with them for half the year. What do they get?
That's my story exactly. The Brady Bunch took my brother and sister's mother away from them.
Wow. Yeah. Interesting.
She had a full-time job, and which was to be with me on the set.
And your father, too.
Right. It certainly had an effect on the, you know, on the family. The thing is, though, I knew what was required of me. Know your lines, hit your mark, you know. It was impressed upon me and all of us very clearly that, sure, have fun, be kids, we want that, we want that to come through in the characters on the show, but this is a job.
We're on the
clock. And you're expected to do it, and you know, don't, you know, there's no margin for screwing this up. And so that was my focus. You know, my little brother's focus was Mom's gone, you know. It's hard to know that you're living an extraordinary experience, especially as a child, while you're in the middle of doing it.
You're in it.
Well, you know, but you know that your life is a little bit different.
We were the only six kids in a big studio filled with grown-ups all day long.
Mm-hmm. Here's another way to look at it. My dad was a provider, and he had certain expectations of his wife and my brothers and my mother. One of them was to have dinner on the table at 6 o'clock. So with the grocery shopping done, and sometimes we would work past 6 o'clock, and then we're in Hollywood and have a 50-minute drive home. So everyone's sitting around going, well, where's dinner? Mom's with Barry. Oh, right.
And a lot of this hasn't been discussed up front or negotiated beforehand. You know, it's not like, okay, this is what's going to happen. And this, so dinner's right. going to be late. We're going to, you know, adapt to a later light.
And how do all you feel about that? You know, none of that.
And there's no choice
how you feel about it.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
Right.
Wow, that's so interesting. I never looked at that way.
You think the girls had similar experiences?
I don't think Susan did, because Susan was the youngest by a long shot. Well, no, she had an older sister. But being the youngest meant that I know my older brother probably had less of a problem with my mom not being around at 14 than my 4-year-old brother, you know, my 3-year-old brother, who was being raised by my, you know, 7-year-old sister, because my dad, he didn't have those skills, you know, nor focus. So he was, I don't know how they survived.
I remember Kurt, you know, our parents never worked at the same time. They had the privilege to be able to choose and schedule when they worked. And wow. When we got a little bit older, I was about 16, almost 17. And they were like, listen, you know, we can't fix this one. We're not going to be, Pa's going to be working nights. You're on your own. And I was
Kate's like, woohoo.
Oh, too bad.
So sad.
Cut to a full montage, which is a montage of Kate getting ready with like playing with the boys theme song going on in the background.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
I want to just say one thing, hold on, about this for people who, you know, I think there's sometimes this sort of misconception that when people aren't in the industry or see it from the outside in, that it's not an incredibly time consuming job, when in fact it's like the most unglamorous and time consuming job when you're on the job. Like when you're on the job, you're working. I mean, obviously you guys were on set, but in other circumstances, you're working in insane places at insane hours, sometimes at night, sometimes working through the night. And when you have a family, it really messes with a traditional family dynamic. It's one of the hardest jobs to have to raise a family in. It's such an interesting perspective to hear it. Here you guys are portraying like this melded family. And then on the flip side of it, it was probably actually really affecting so many families.
It's obvious that it does. And the obvious becomes a surprise when it should have been obvious to families that, you know, if you're living in Ohio and you want one of your children to be in the industry and you're out here for pilot season, it's like, and you got other kids, it's like, who's not thinking of what's going on? I mean, like, how does that work? So you're dreaming of this child to become a huge success. Now, what if they are? Now you're never home, you know? Mm-hmm. What's the other half? Is that they're not a success? Why do you want to drive them into that? I just don't get it. I mean, there's times for you to go plow the field.
How many years were you on the air?
Five seasons.
Which is crazy because that's not a lot.
You were on for 20.
Yeah.
Well, because the show has always been more successful in the rearview mirror than it ever was. That's why when you said hit, and I don't feel we're in the hit that we now look at the show as, because it's done something since it was in, you know, on Friday nights on prime time that very few shows have ever done through the years, being watched by as many eyeballs as it has been around the world. Repetitively, it's reached a different level of a strata because of it compounding its success year over year.
Also, every few years had a little Brady reminder. We've always been doing reunions. We've been doing specials. We've been doing TV movies, and the movies came out. We did the variety show almost immediately after the Brady Bunch went off. We had a Very Brady Christmas. We had the Brady Brides.
Very Brady Christmas.
Brady Girls Get Married. Oh,
which brings me to this too, Barry. What with all of the singing and the singing numbers, like what was your guys' relationship to that? Was it something you were excited by, or was this like a...
Okay, but I'll start because, you know, I was telling you that I've always loved it and I wanted more, and music was part of it. So I was just a cheerleader for getting songs on the Brady Bunch, getting choreography, get dressed up and holding microphones, going on concert, doing albums. This to me was just like too good, you know, TV and a rock star too. Come to find out, I should have checked with everybody else a little bit beforehand.
That's funny. I've always been very adept at carrying out other people's plans. Tell me, I'm results oriented. Tell me what, you know, what's the goal? Okay, what's my part in that? Okay, let's do it. Boom, boom, boom.
Well, but how convenient. You're a cow sill, you know, of sorts.
Right.
You're trained in it.
I could sing, I could hold my part in three-part harmony, vocal harmony, when I was 3 years old. Wow.
Do you have any phobias,
Mike? Do you have
perfect
pitch?
Yeah,
no, I think but it's pretty close.
Yeah. So, Mike, do you have any phobias?
Do
you have any phobias whatsoever that you're aware of?
Phobias. I know where he's going with this.
You like heights?
No. I don't have any real.
You like tight phobias. Holes? Like
I get really uptight about certain spaces. Things, but no phobias. No.
What do you get uptight about?
He's not biting. Not biting.
What I'm challenging you on, figure out what your phobia is and be asked that is the thing you have to accomplish.
Right. Oh,
yeah.
Right.
I'm goals oriented. Yeah, right. But if it happens to be you're not, you don't like heights and the goal is to build a building on an I-beam, you know, yeah. A quarter mile in the air.
No, then you'd be tortured.
Yeah, you'd go along with
it. Living in torture.
Or you were living in torture.
Presented by 21 Seeds.
Ollie.
Yeah, so you know, because you have a ton of friends and you throw a lot of parties.
Yeah.
You don't really. I mean, you've got your core group of friends.
I do throw a lot of
you
parties.
You do throw a lot of parties.
I love a party.
You need a signature cocktail that's ready to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's also actually nice to have a signature cocktail that's ready to go when you don't have a bartender.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's just nice to have something in your fridge when you get home from work and you just want to drink.
This is true.
But you know why I like this brand of tequila?
Let me guess. Can I guess?
Yes.
Female-founded.
Yes. I love a female-founded spirit because there aren't that many of us.
I know. And 21 Seeds makes the most delicious and easiest margaritas ever. They're smooth. They're fresh. They taste amazing. And they're not too sweet.
No.
I do not like sweet.
They're not overly sweet.
Yeah. And they're infused with real juice.
Yes. I love women. I love supporting women. So.
Two sisters, one friend.
Listen, if you love tequila, add 21 Seeds infused tequila to your drink bar at home.
Enjoy responsibly. 21 Seeds, Diageo, New York, New York.
It's a fun time of year because everybody's starting to gear up. You've got spring break happening soon. You've got summer happening soon. Everybody's thinking about their vacations. My number one source for where I might even go in the world, Airbnb. I've got spring break. I'm shooting. I only have 4 days. Where am I going to go? I go on Airbnb and that usually is like, oh, there's a good house. I love that. Let's stay there. If you are someone who travels a lot or even has an empty room in your house, consider hosting on Airbnb. It's a lot easier than you might think, and it's also a great way to make some extra income. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
I'm going to ask a totally random question because it's something I have all my questions that I want to get through before we have to end this and say goodbye. But there's so many things that I want to ask and we've like haven't even touched them. One of which is, does anyone know who came up with the blue boxes? Was that like a
marketing department?
Marketing was, or was
way
that
to tell a story? No, I don't think it was Mario. I think it was probably Sherwood.
Someone in the, was it the writer, you know?
The story is in the song. The intro, the it explains everything in the song, and it had to be. There had to be a way to present the visuals with the song.
And your answer is, we don't know.
You don't know. It's so interesting to think, because like something that was so iconic. There's so many iconic moments on the Brady Bunch, but that was such a brilliant, you know, iconic introduction to all of these characters.
Well, I think it's kind of what do they call that? Parallel creation or parallel invention, you know, two different evolutions arriving at the same place.
Mm-hmm.
Zoom discovered the same thing, that Sherwood and whomever was creating this front end of the Brady Bunch did, that when you have a cast of nine, how do you present them?
Mm-hmm.
And Zoom perfect. Did the same boxes. Square.
They probably, someone should be getting a cut.
did you guys get along with the girls? Was it a family that way? Or was
I was in very close with Susan Olsen. We both have a real kind of off kilter sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And for years, we had sort of a mutual endeavor, which was to make the other one laugh.
Mm-hmm.
To make the other one laugh.
One of the benefits, maybe in the brilliance of Tony Kelman choosing the Brady Bunch over Courtship of Betty's Father of this show for us was that there were other kids there. And it was an environment that Sherwood wanted to make certain was healthy for these kids, because he wanted us to remain kids. Well, the five of us, not Barry. So it was, of all environments to work in, it wasn't a corrupted one. I mean, I look back on it and my salvation was supplied by having the idea of what a nuclear family is through the show, because it wasn't at home.
Mm-hmm.
Did anyone get too big for their britches?
No, I don't think we could have with the amount of parents we had around us.
Kind of wrecked that family dynamic when I started dating Maureen, however.
Oh, really?
Oh, Barry, you dated Maureen?
Yeah. How did that work?
It really didn't work.
Maureen's mom couldn't drive, but she had to be with her. They didn't live too far. So for all 5 years, we drove in. We drove Maureen in on occasion, maybe when I had a hold, which was very rare. Certainly not on any days that were school. If Susan was working, they didn't live too far. They'd drive in, or Maureen and her mom would drive in with Susan, but mostly with me. And I had those 2 hours, because then it was about an hour. We lived in the West Valley, to get to the studio and back to listen to Maureen. And I'd already probably, heard from Barry that day about Maureen. So I was this intermediary between their
love dance,
their attraction, the repelling. It was just the oddest.
Did Barry, were you just like, Barry was just like, all right, how did that flourish?
Well, you start going out and you get a little closer during the photo shoots, and suddenly there's an arm around somebody just as good friends. And then there's the come on over to my house and we'll swim naked. Let it take a natural course.
So do you guys have is there a Brady Bunch group chat? Is there are you guys on one chat?
No, we have a podcast that Chris was talking about, called The Real Brady Bros.
Yeah.
And basically episodic recap. So we take an episode each week and we both watch it. We take notes, we exchange notes, and then we get together in a very similar fashion to this and talk about the show and with our perspectives on it now and thought about it. But the most interesting part about it, aside from deepening our own relationship because of that consistency and we're really pulling from our past, is we remember things like we're in two completely different situations. The age difference, him being 3 years younger than I, and I'll go on about, well, this happened and this happened. And he go, well, no, and he'll come up with a different story sometimes. And it's fascinating to how we each interpreted our experiences and how, with the hindsight, they can kind of, formulate differences, big differences of opinions. It's fascinating and fun.
That's really, perception is a very interesting topic, because most people have very different perceptions. Then when you get that in a family dynamic, Ollie and I talk about it all the time, I'll have a completely different memory of something.
Isn't that amazing?
And relationship to it than he does in the exact same circumstance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to use as an illustration something came up in this podcast from Michael. He said that, I was too cool for him, and I was busy being, kind of full of myself. I don't have that impression. Yes, I tried to carry myself as being cool, but I wanted to be an adult. So I was just gravitating away. I was hanging out with the people that were hanging the lights or running the camera. I was trying to talk to the director. I hung with Robert Reed a lot because he was an actor, and Florence because she had the musical side. And that's just where my attention went. So I really didn't have time for an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old. And so I can see how that would affect him now. But at the time, I didn't think anything of it. And I certainly wasn't, it just wasn't in my radar.
I would like to point out how our family dynamic, which developed over the years, has continued over the decades. When upon being invited onto their podcast, I assumed that my role was to come on and goof around and just goof off, because that's kind of been like my place. And so I listened to their podcast and I thought to myself, man, these guys are serious. They're taking this very seriously. This is a real nuts and bolts analysis of this episode with all the historical perspective. And so upon learning that,
you're not at all like Bobby. Bobby was succinct.
upon realizing that that these guys were taking this very seriously, I figured my role was to come in and goof around even more.
Mm-hmm.
Right. and that's what I did. These guys need a little levity in their life.
What was it like after the show ended? You know, I mean, was it bittersweet? Was it sad? What was the experience from coming off a show that became so iconic and probably was in the moment?
A quick story on this that happened. For 5 years, we're driving onto the lot. We have our own parking spots. We got our own dressing rooms. We have home, which was our soundstage, 5 at Paramount. And I got noticed that we were canceled on a Friday. On Monday, I drove to the lot to pick up the things out of my dressing room. And I was stopped by the same guard, Fritz, that I saw every morning. Good morning, Fritz. I said, good morning, Fritz. And he said, hey, Barry, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm going in to clear out my dressing room. He says, oh, do you have a drive-on pass?
God.
I said, no.
And
he said, okay, well, pull over there and I'll call and see if I can, you know, get you one, which he did. Then he directed me to some other place on the lot that was way too far to carry things. So I went to my parking space and I got to my parking space. And between Friday and Monday morning at 9 o'clock, it had been painted over and it had a new name on it. And I went, oh, so we've been canceled. And I felt canceled. And that was my reaction to it.
Yeah.
There's two different reality. I mean, certainly as the show was going on, it was losing its ability to connect, in a real organic or honest kind of way. I mean, it mostly fit for a 12, 13 year old kind of psyche. And as you're now pushing 17, it was harder to, connect with what was on the page, and you could imagine that, okay, this isn't going to change. This is probably, it's probably time to leave. We all had 5-year contracts. So there was some expectation on my part that it probably would get canceled. So when it was, maybe that was just me anticipating properly and was helped me prepare for that. But there was, you know, I was happy because I was in the middle of school and wanted to continue my school. And the one thing we couldn't get in those 3 hours a day is any kind of lab classes. And I'm big with science, and there was no labs for me until I could get back to my high school. So I got that in. I mean, it was good timing. It was perfect time. It was last minute timing for me. But then it took me a couple of years after that in trying to find my new place in the world to realize what I had as a home that wasn't there anymore.
Mm, interesting.
Wasn't immediate.
Chris pointed out earlier that our show really didn't become like that American iconic touchstone, you know, that it did until we were in syndication for years. And so as soon as the show's canceled, we start looking for new work. I got the job on The Towering Inferno within a couple of weeks. And we filmed The Towering Inferno that entire summer that would have been season 6 of The Brady Bunch. So I had a job at 20th Century Fox doing something insanely completely different. That was Irwin Allen directed that movie. It was awesome.
Cool. How fun.
Paul Newman carried me out. I got to tell you guys,
great.
Kurt Russell used to come to my house in San Pedro.
He was playing baseball?
No, my little brother was in a series with him. I think my brother played his nephew in The New Land. You remember a series called The New Land?
No, he's done so many of those series.
Yeah. Well, he'd come in his El Camino and do push-ups in the living room with my brother sitting on his back. And I remember my mother was quick to point out that the entire like passenger compartment of his blue El Camino was filled with empty beer cans.
I didn't even know Paul had an El Camino.
Oh, I did. Oh, I for sure did. Like, he's always talked to us
about the El Camino.
Oh yeah, that's amazing.
So thanks for letting me. Thanks for letting. That's our 1 degree of separation.
I love that. Well, yeah. Listen, we're not going to keep you longer, but we love to do our rapid fire. Mm-hmm. And I have to start with a couple of them because I have, you know, Barry, I'm going to start with you because I know you did Dancing with the Stars. And what was your favorite dance?
The tango. It's a great dance, and yeah, it's very moody and it's very dramatic. If you don't know, or people that don't know, understand the roles of the dance, the male is typically the matador, the toreador, and the woman plays sometimes the cape, sometimes the bull, and then sometimes the object of desire. It was fabulous.
Are you still dancing?
Oh, yes. Yeah. In fact, I've booked a cruise for my birthday next year. It'd be my 70th birthday that I know in the Greek Isles, starts in Athens and goes to over to Spain. And it has a dance floor on it. So my wife and I
have
routines fun, and we're go out there and tear it up.
I fun. Love it. Okay. Next one I want from each of you. You had some amazing guest stars on the Brady Bunch. Who was the guest star that you were most excited about?
Joan Amath.
Deacon Jones.
Vincent Price.
I mean, it's like, it's crazy how many people were on this show.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And all three of those are so awesome.
Wow. Joe Namath. That's pretty rad.
Joe Namath.
Pretty cool.
Paul Winchell was cool too.
Wow.
Okay.
And Paul Winchell helped invent the artificial heart, for crying out loud. Yeah. He's like an inventor as well.
If you could swap lives with one of your siblings on the Brady Bunch, what would it be? If you had to, not if you wanted to, but if you
including,
had to.
Including all siblings.
All siblings, girls, all. If you were Marcia
May for sure, because she always gets more.
Just the siblings, not other cast members.
No, just the, just the siblings.
I'll do Maureen just so I can figure it out.
Man, you got me on that one, Kate. I don't know. I wouldn't trade. That's my answer.
Good. You gotta trade.
Okay.
I love it.
Then it's 3 for 3, Maureen McCormick.
Yeah.
I'm not even gonna say why.
I totally guessed that.
Oh, yeah. Maureen.
But only like, you know, half a day. Yeah, that would be enough to figure it out.
If you could do one really amazing thing with the cast again, anything, what would it be?
Are we talking a project or just go fishing?
Yeah, anything.
Updated a series that is as current sensibilities.
I like it.
Doing the HGTV project was pretty remarkable. I mean, because, you know, we got to all participate and take something that was never real and make it real. And the house itself turns out to be one of the characters that we all remember. And I mean, it's timeless for a house that was from the late 60s.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, so, I don't know. We might have already done the project that.
Yeah, I was going to say. Are you saying we've already done it? Right.
Yeah.
I think. The number one question that I've been asked by just random people over the years is, do you still keep in touch with the other people? You know, it's a perfectly valid question. People are interested. The answer is yes, and I would just say I'd like that to continue.
Yay.
Yeah.
I'll think about it.
I want to hear your band. I want to hear your dead.
We're the Pranksters. You can live stream Pranksters.
Okay, great.
We actually don't suck. We're not too shitty.
I wouldn't think you did.
Thank you guys. This has been really, really fun.
So much fun. I'm grateful that you came on, and to meet you is wonderful. So thank you.
Thank you guys.
Thanks, Oliver. Thank you, Kate.
Thank you.
We'll see you again sometime.
Bye now.
We'll see you, boys.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies for a post-errands pick-me-up. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.